Dead. Okay, colleagues, and we are not far. Still far, not far. Let's start again and see how far we go. Surely by tomorrow we are gone. We're gone tomorrow. Dube, you are right? Can we start? We are on page 138, clause 68A, delegation of powers and duties by premier. Go back to work and see what are the new areas there. Clause 68, sub 1. Idea there, any issue? These clauses are correct. Honorable Melher.
Chair, I'd propose adding in a new sub clause 5 that says such a delegation shall, within 30 days of the delegation being made, be reported to the minister in writing.
Yeah, the minister must be notified in the administrative matter. Okay. Monitoring, clause 69, sub 1. Sub 2. Sub 3. Honourable members, help with the sub clauses. Clause 69. Page 140. Transitional arrangement. Clause 17. Sub 1A. Any traditional leader. Honorable Matsibe.
Can we get a clarity on this transitional traditional leader? Says here, any traditional leader.
Traditional.
Okay. I was misreading that any traditional leader, said any transitional leader.
Well, this is not a bad idea. I nearly joined you myself. It's very progressive. They're exhausting you, Honorable Masip. Let's move and see what else we can say. 24 September 2014. Honorable Madam.
Chair, just before we go off this, any traditional leader who was appointed or recognized and was still recognized as a traditional leader immediately before 24 September 2004. Okay, that's one group of traditional leaders. Or who was recognized as such in terms of the Traditional Leadership Governance Framework Act. That's a separate group of traditional leaders. But surely all of those who are legitimate in terms of one would be part of two. In other words, there aren't any who were recognized before September 2004 who have not been recognized in terms of the Traditional Leadership and Governance Framework Act, because the Traditional Leadership and Governance Framework Act was there to recognize them. So why do we have that Roman 1 clause at all?
Well, does it cause harm? It's just elaboration, really. There's category 1 and 2.
Hmm? I suspect it might cause harm, because there might be someone who lost their leadership through some kind of dispute or something like that, who was a leadership and who was a leader and was recognized prior to 24 September 2004, who has not been recognized as one later, but was recognized at that time, who's now going to stick up their hand and say, oh, but, you know, I was actually recognized way back when, even if I haven't been one for the last 13 years. I would rather that we took that out, that there's no... They had to have been recognized in terms of the TLGFA.
Pastor and teacher.
Traditional leaders have been recognized over many years. And this clause, all it is saying, that date of 24 September 2004 is the commencement date of the Framework Act. So all it says is those who were recognized prior to the Framework Act and those who were recognized after the coming into operation of the Framework Act. They were traditional leaders recognized in terms of other legislation prior to the Framework Act. There's nothing, nowhere, that says that a person who was... whose recognition has been withdrawn and does not meet the requirements can now all of a sudden be regarded as being legitimately recognized because of this provision. That can't never happen, because you must still meet the requirements and you must still have had a legally recognized certificate.
My point is this. If they were recognized in terms of the Framework Act, all those who should have been recognized would have been recognized in terms of the Framework Act. They would have been treated as such. They would have had some kind of recognition in terms of the Framework Act over the course of the last 13 years. Even those who were recognized by other legislation before that, they would have had to have been almost re-recognized in terms of the Framework Act. My concern is that there might be one or two who were not recognized in terms of the Framework Act, but who in terms of this will say, but I was a recognized traditional leader before September 2004, and therefore I am deemed to be a traditional leader in terms of this transitional arrangement. So what I'm saying is that all of the recognition should be in terms of the Framework Act, and we should discard any recognition prior to that, because it would have been dealt with as part of the Framework Act and the implementation of the Framework Act.
It
sounds to me that there will be no harm if we amend it according to the proposal made, unless there will be adverse implications. However, the circumstances under which somebody can come back and say, I was not recognized at a particular point, I must be recognized, there are certain conditions that exclude the person not to be recognized. We dealt with them, last week and so on. But I'm just saying, I don't see any harm if we could do what you're proposing. Because unless the legal people feel otherwise.
Prof, you wanted to make a point?
Jefferson, I think we need to think about this one. It might be, it might also not be. The view is that when the, let me call it the original Framework Act came into operation, there was also transitional arrangements to deal with the traditional leaders recognized in terms of previous legislation. Now the framework, this bill repeals the Framework Act. And what it does, maybe you are right to say those that were recognized in terms of previous legislation were recognized. But it covers those that are now recognized in terms of the Framework Act. So I think we must really unpack this a little bit.
Uh, Okay. Then you can rework it a little bit, because there's no harm anyway to retain this. It's just if there are some overlap and some confusion, sure the lawyers are here to clarify it at least better. I think they are capable of assisting us to do it that way. Okay, let us move to see premier mass within 3 years. Page 141. Sub 7. Clause 70, sub 1C. Any point there? Sub 1C, Roman figure 2. Any point there? Sub 1C point sub Roman figure 3. Yes.
On C Roman 2, if an investigation finds that any headmanship does not meet the relevant criteria, such headmanship shall automatically be disestablished upon the death or resignation of the relevant headman. And the appointment of Orican.
What is the problem?
Chair, why does it remain in place until that person's death? If an investigation has determined that there is no headmanship there, why is the headmanship not immediately withdrawn and disestablished? Why are we leaving them in place as a headman until their death?
Honorable Maswano.
My understanding, Chairperson, from previous discussions that we've had was that there's been an understanding. Of course, the gurus must explain it, the lawyers must explain it. My understanding was that it had been decided that upon being identified as such, that the person is not legitimate, there'll be a grace period provided. And that grace period will be from the time that the determination is made to the time when the person dies, so that the whoever was supposed to follow the person who's been in charge and in that position of responsibility would have his or entitlement terminated automatically. So I thought maybe the lawyers could explain it, that this is just an explanation in keeping with what has been decided already.
Thanks. But I think it's in keeping with the other hierarchies. After Nkapo has investigated and found that there are some paramount chiefs that were not qualifying. And the Nkapo Commission had decision-making powers. And then they, as they were putting their decision on the table, it had far-reaching implications in terms of destabilizing the country. Because some people were known as paramount chiefs for 50 years or even more than that by people. So the Nkapo Commission would say, no, but you were wrongly placed as this thing. And then that's why the amendment of 2009 to say there must be a transitional thing so that, you know, you don't just stop it as if, you know, it's easy to stop it like that. And if you have this sort of arrangement, and I suspect that it's most likely to be once off. As soon as this law, you know, is promulgated, because there will be many, as we speak now, you will have many senior traditional leaders appointing headmen and appointing people and so on. And they think it's within their right that they can just go carry on appointing. So this is going to normalize that, to say, you know, this is the criteria. If you don't fit this, you know, this is how it will be phased out.
Chair, the DG's just made my point for me. Right now we have a lot of headmen and headwomen being appointed. I mean, we're seeing it. We've got an issue in KZN where they are suddenly having to find finances to fund 1,800 odd headmen. Am I wrong? My point is that many of those may have not met the criteria for headmanship. So suddenly we're appointing everybody now, and in 3 years' time we're going to say, oh no, you were wrongfully appointed, but we're going to keep you as a headman for the next 50 years for the remainder of your life. And that can't be right. You're gonna get the salary, you're gonna get the benefits, etc., of being a headman, even though you were wrongfully appointed as such. If they don't meet the criteria, we should withdraw recognition and say, ah.
You know, that for example, the example the honourable member is making. You know, for example, KZN, there's a head count. You know, a headman, for example, a headman or headwoman, it's a person responsible for a village. Now, there are unique issues of people that are called headmen in Duna who are not responsible for villages. And so that has been clarified with KZN. And that they've got 3,100 headmen, it's a round figure, and so on. The issue of the budget, it's because, you know, over the years, there's been the issue of saying whether we pay them or not, something like that. So then, even in different provinces, we've got the exact figures. So this will not affect too many people. There will be certain circumstances where people may not meet these criteria steps, and it's for that purpose. It's not... This proliferation I'm talking about is not even being paid at the moment. Because for you to be paid, you know, it has got to be ratified at provincial level. Yeah.
Okay.
Chairperson, I think DG has answered the question. All I can add to that is to say previous legislation never contained any criteria in terms of which a headmanship should comply before recognition. And we must remember that quite a number of headmanship were inherited in terms of the previous legislation. So this is the first time that the bill put in place mechanisms to say a headmanship before recognized must comply to the following criteria. And I do think that if a headmanship was recognized 20 years back, and now suddenly they complied in terms of previous legislation, and suddenly now they don't comply with this, it might be a little unfair to say to that person, you are now gone, you can't get anything. I think that is just to, and as DG said, there are not that many of these people. It's just to, because it was not his fault that he was recognized. Thank you.
Okay. I think we'll work out the question of traditional leaders. Traditional is in Duna. Provincial government are working out of this matter. Of course, could be very expensive, and there's a headman for a village, there's a headman for Insizwa, headman for Intombi. I think there'll be a headman for Bokoko, Nomkulu. And in general, is expanding. And then we should look at it seriously and see, because some can volunteer to do their work. Not everyone should be paid, otherwise it's too costly for us to do so. They're doing a good job. We need to acknowledge that and try to see that we do everything within the parameters of the law. That must be.
Clarity, Chair. As of now, there are indunas in the traditional settings. And
the bill here speaks of headmen and headwomen. Now it says an individual can come before the province and or the premier and ask for recognition. The traditional leaders, as we speak, are the ones who are actually under the act that is being repealed. They are the ones who recommend to say, this one is a traditional leader in my village. Now, I wonder whether traditional leaders are aware of these changes that individuals can actually go to the premier and make an application to be recognized. And then the question would be, under whose jurisdiction, if the traditional leader is not actually aware of you wanting to become a headman or a headwoman? Can we get clarity there? Who's actually, am I as aspirant headman personally making an application, or should I go via the traditional leader?
The process is government does not appoint headman traditional leaders. It's a royal family matter. So the royal family deals with that. After dealing with it, then they submit it to government. And then government looks at, you know, if we're applying this set of criteria, whether this set of criteria has been followed and stuff like that. And the question whether communities know what they need to do, that's how they've been doing it. Because if they don't follow these procedures, they will never get paid. And you know, the same applies from the kingship. It's a president that recognizes the kingship, but he doesn't appoint the kingships and queenships. It's royal families that do that, having followed due process. Then the next levels would follow the same kind of thing, up to headmanship as well.
Now, this is causing conflict because a traditional leader would not support somebody who has to become a headman just because that person does not, you know, augur well with the traditional leader. As we speak now, under the old act that we are repealing, a call from the provinces that they must, traditional leaders must make a submission, must submit a list of people who must be recognized. So legitimate people are quite often not being, you know, allowed by the traditional leader to become headmen and headwomen. How do we actually control that kind of a sort of, you can't be a headman if you don't toe the line? How do you control that one?
Johan?
Chairperson, thank you. I think that's exactly what the bill now intends to do. I think we need to understand that we can't talk of individuals as headmen. First of all, the institution must be recognized. The institution of headmanship, that muraka or mutsi, must be recognized. And for that, they have put criteria. If they meet the criteria, that institution of headmanship, it's the same, the recognition of a traditional community, must comply to certain criteria. So the same now applies to headmanship. It's to do away with this thing that it's an individual relationship to recognize a leader. No. First of all, the institution must be recognized of headmanship. And only thereafter will the community and the royal family then decide and recognize, in terms of custom, the rightful headman of that village. And that will then go through the traditional council to government for recognition and remuneration. So I think it's going to be very difficult now for a traditional leader to just submit names or no. It can't happen like that. It's the institution that must be recognized first. And within the customary law, the individual, the custodian, or let me say, the person that will be recognized will then be identified by that village, and they will submit the name to the traditional council, and that will go to government. So I think there are a lot of checks and balances in place to do away with this individual type of arrangement of people. Thank you.
For example, in a kingship, the example you are giving, it will never happen that somebody just says, I want to become a senior traditional leader in the jurisdiction of a king without following the processes that he's talking about, because it's so structured in a way that it doesn't just happen. The king cannot just say you or something like that. So there are those processes that are in place. And this has been working for a long time.
I think we are fine with sub 3D. Honorable Malher.
Chair, I'd like to insert after the words not inconsistent with the Framework Act and which complies with all requirements of that act. In other words, one of the things that we did in the Amendment Act was we put in certain requirements for traditional councils and that they were then legitimate traditional councils. Now, if they were established but not legitimate, we shouldn't deem them to be have been established in terms of 16 and 17 of this Act. In other words, we need to make sure that they comply with the criteria that we set there, even if they were established but not. So shall I read it again? After the words, not inconsistent with the Framework Act, we insert, and which comply with all requirements of that act.
Okay. I think there's no problem with that, really. Johan, it seems you are finding it difficult. We are fine. It was just elaboration, really. It doesn't change the content. And it gives us more space. Okay. And then can we do 270 sub 2? Any person who has recognized? Acting leader or deputy leader? There's a lot of discussion about these deputies. Deputy leader, all that. I think we agree how we want it to have. We agree how we handle it, and Honorable Dube, are you fine with that? Okay, can we page through page 142, clause 70, sub 3, any tribe? Yes, sir.
The word tribe.
Yeah.
Not, I think we need to rethink. The word tribe is derogatory.
Mm.
Historically. You know, when you're talking about a community or a nation and what have you, I'm just saying that perhaps we need to think of the correct concept there. You know, the issue of tribal authority in itself was a derogatory phrase. And a tribe, and many people today, if you can stand and address them and tell them they're a tribe, you know, they are going to fight you back. So I'm just saying these words that were used during apartheid days, and you must just think carefully. I don't have...
Within a community, you do have a tribe within a community. And the tribe quite often is the main core, is the core of that community. I don't disagree with you when you say it is derogatory, but I'm saying that within the community there is a tribe. And let me say you have several tribes. The tribe, in fact, in this particular respect, becomes the main leadership structure within that community. We do have tribes there, but I don't disregard the fact that
it is a derogatory, it is indeed, but a community is made of various tribes.
Honorable Matsondo, and then we'll follow Honorable Malam.
No, why don't we say, Chairperson, that we should note what has been raised by the DG, so that appropriate wording can be found. Because indeed we do have a dilemma of sorts, in that the terminology we use does not in many instances accord with words that are being used internationally, so to speak. For instance, this thing of saying Isichaba sa Batlokwa. Batlokwa is not a nation in terms of how the word nation is used generally, internationally, if you like. Batlokwa is not even, I mean, Batlokwa is a subgroup within the Tswana bigger group, is a subgroup of even of a subgroup, I believe, even argue. So I'm just saying that the use of words, it's a fairly sensitive one, and if appropriate wording is found, fine. If not, we can revisit the issue at a later stage. But it's a difficult question. So we can't hope to sort it out here and now. The Zulu nation, for instance. The Zulu nation is Zulu nation. It's the nation. Are we? Is South Africa a nation? Are we working in that kind of direction? Because if South Africa is a nation, then the Zulus can be a nation. And so on and so forth. I'm just saying that the question of use of words and so on is a difficult one. So let's be careful. And let's not spend too much time on that.
Honorable Malham, I note you. I thought colleagues would have agreed to call this traditional community.
Can I just clarify something?
Yeah.
The reason, and I stand to be corrected here, but if I read this clause, what it's doing is it's referring to old legislation. Mm. And in old legislation, and I'm not talking the Framework Act, I'm talking before that, there were communities that were recognized as, and I'm going to use the word, tribes. And what this is saying is if they were recognized as a tribe as defined in that old legislation, then they are deemed to be a traditional community now. So it's really just bringing through the recognition from the past. And I acknowledge absolutely that the word may have negative connotations and the like. But that's what the legislation said then, and we need to bring it through to now, so the definition then now changes to the definition now. So all this is saying is that if you were recognized in previous legislation as a tribe, you are now recognized as a traditional community.
Well, I thought that's what it says, but the point that is raised is that do you want to call them tribe now? No. We call them traditional communities. Before 94, they were called, in fact, not even 94, a long time ago, they were called tribes. And but now we call them traditional communities. And the use of the word tribe, I think it's just recognizing something that pre-existing before 94. After 94, we don't call them tribes. We call them traditional communities. And there will be no harm for us to... That's why I think the writers, they put it into brackets, just to indicate again sensitivity of the word, that it means prior to democratic breakthrough. And there are a lot of tribes that were called upon. But if we find a better suitable word, there will be no revolt to do that. But in terms of the understanding of the committees to find those communities that used to be Bashowa, Abraham National, they are communities. Now we call them communities. But before that, before you came into power, Masondo, they were called tribes. There was a tribe that was there near Kazankulu, Professor. A bigger one there. They were calling them tribes, the tribe, but I think it's a part of the Shawukes and Gubenis, and they were seeing themselves as a nation, themselves as a tribe and all that. And then, that long time ago, I think even themselves, they are moving away from this thing that is called tribe. I think people settle to this traditional community because then that is consistent with how we call Khoi and San traditional communities. There's no harm, I guess, to indicate that if there are better waiting anyway, we can't revolt against that. Let us look at it. But it doesn't harm as it stands now. It doesn't harm anyone as it stands now. Okay, can we move on? Masipe tribe? I say that in one community there are many tribes. Okay, let's move to recommendation of a commission, sub B of 3. Let's go to 4. Tribal authority, what does that one there has been established? Again, is one thing that is says deemed to be traditional council. We used to have tribal authorities, Melham. Do you want to be one of them? You can be a member of a TC, traditional council.
Just to be consistent with 71D, I think that we should put in the bit that says, provided that such a traditional tribal authority that immediately before 24 September has been established and was still recognized as such is deemed to be a traditional council in terms
of, I think that's fine.
Chair, my concern is that if there was a tribal authority that had not complied with the Framework Act, then they shouldn't be recognized as a traditional council now until they comply. And here you're saying that provided that they must comply within 1 year, you're basically saying, well, we're going to historically legitimize you even though you didn't comply with any of the requirements for the past 13 years. And I think that we need to bring back what I said under 70 sub 1D, where and is consistent with the requirements of the Framework Act.
Okay. Language practitioners. I think it would be Johan, your best.
I think
state law advisor.
Yeah, I'll
the intern.
State law advisors to help. The intern is sitting on my left here at the moment.
The intern is here, and then there's Duve there, the traditional council leaders.
Chair, I think with this one, I'm not Sitole, but I'll continue. I think with this one, it's slightly different maybe from the others in the sense that there's a similar provision in that Framework Amendment Bill that you dealt with recently. You must comply with the requirements of Section 16.2. So if you go to Section 16.2, which is a cross-reference here, That's where it has the requirements of what traditional council needs to meet before it can be regarded as a traditional council. In other words, what this clause is saying is these tribal authorities will be regarded as traditional councils, but provided that they meet the requirements of Section 16.2.
Yeah.
And they must do so within this particular 1 year. If they don't meet the requirements, they can't qualify.
Yes, sir.
What concerns me is that in that 1 year period, they are given legal status. In other words, they are a recognized legal entity and they can transact. Now, if they are non-compliant and they've got a year to get compliant, any transactions that take place over the course of that year are legal, even if at the end of that year they are determined not to be compliant. So I have a worry about granting a legal status, a legitimate status, a representative status to a body that is not legitimate.
Let me take Honorable Maluleke.
Chairperson, here it says this tribal authority has been recognized, has been established. And now because we want to deem it traditional council, it must meet the requirement. And if it does not meet the requirement within that 1 year, then the minister must determine what is going to happen. But we cannot say within that 1 year they are not there. They have been recognized, they have been established prior September 2004.
And then once they recognize their function, like all other TCs, and they function there, and then within a year, then if they're not recognized, they're gone.
I'm also looking at the difficulties of converting them into a traditional council are very cumbersome. If you look at the Framework Amendment Bill, the reason why we're asking for extension there to finalize that process, we're quite often asked that the ones that are not complying are illegal, and indeed they are. So in order to finalize this thing properly, you know, that's why there's a provision there. It's something that is complex. But I understand the point the Honorable Member is making, that, you know, well, you will be legitimizing a structure that doesn't comply 100% with what we want to see. But in the nature of this, if we failed to get, you know, some provinces not completing this exercise, maybe it will be something that will give us enough time so that we don't deal with extensions beyond this.
Okay. We note the point. Maybe tomorrow, if we slip over this matter, there's some clarity somewhere. We can relook at it and see what we can say. Can we go to sub 5A? Any community authority? There's community authority now. Okay. Any issue with this one? I thought it's clear what his intention. Can we move sub 5B? That.
Prof, what is implied here? Does it mean that in the future, national committees who do not meet the requirements, is there going to be a process to say to them, come and, you know, sort of substantiate your origin, where do you come from, what are your structures, and what if you, does it mean that?
in the, these structures were given the opportunity to those that wanted to send the applications to the Commission on Disputes and what have you. You know, they were given that sort of opportunity. That is why on the Amendment Bill, were asking that we're given enough time. You know, it was not done. They were given this opportunity. They didn't do it on time. So we are saying that it is not desirable to continue with community authorities. And they must be disestablished and so on. So they were originally given the opportunity in the Framework Act. They didn't comply. So this is another chance that they're given, you know, through this year. Johan, can you clarify community authority?
Thank you, Chairperson. Yeah, I think the issue of community authorities has got a history to it. Originally, in the past, when a community did not qualify to be recognized as a traditional community, in terms of the then legislation, they recognized that community as a community authority. They also established what they call a community authority, a council for that community. There was also provision in the 51 Act to say wherever the members of a traditional community stay intermingled together, they could recognize a community authority for those communities. And I think we do currently have examples in KZN where they have established community authorities for one or more recognized traditional leaders. But that was done to for the administration of those communities. You know, where people stay intermingled, it was not possible to define an area of jurisdiction for that specific community. So that's when a community authority was established. Currently, there is a process where they are now unbundling the community authority by defining the areas of these traditional communities separately to comply with legislation. So the bill now proposes, and even the Framework Act proposed, that community authorities as they existed, specifically those that were just communities and not any, had no linkage with a traditional community, that they should be disestablished. And the DG has indicated that some of these community authorities, in terms of the law, had the opportunity to take their cases to the Commission for them to be recognized as a traditional community. Some of them did comply, and they will be recognized. But those that do not comply, they are the ones that need to be disestablished now. And this is why at the time frame for the disestablishment lapsed, it was also extended in the Framework Amendment Act. Is also now here, so there's that relation. Thank you.
In terms of consistency, a question was asked by Honourable Malam earlier to say why a particular action was not done by the MEC responsible for COGTA in the province. And we have been saying, you know, it's the Premier throughout. Now I see the member of the Executive Council, which is an MEC in this case. Dr. Besser, you could maybe clarify.
In line with the current law.
Okay. Okay.
See, there's a lot of reference here to the commission that we've just deleted, that we'll have to see how we go to.
Can I just have C Romans 3 explained to me? As I read it, a kingship or queenship lapses where the position of the incumbent king or queen is occupied by a regent or an acting regent on the death of such regent or acting incumbent. Okay, so I get that part. Or on the date of the recognition of a successor. Now that's the part I don't actually... So the regent dies, even though there is a minor child that is the heir to that paramountcy, the kingship or queenship lapses at that point. That's the way I read it. But what do you mean by on the date of the recognition of a successor?
Jay, I hope I understand this one correctly. Remember, a regent is there for a minor. So, on the date that minor takes over the kingship or the queenship, then, that regent is no longer there, the minor takes over, then this kingship or queenship lapses on that particular date. This is now in cases where it is a kingship or a queenship that did not meet the requirements for kingship or queenship, so it becomes a principle, a traditional leadership. In other words, that regent will be there until that regent's death or the minor takes over, becomes the principal traditional leader. Am I right, John? Is that the one?
Yeah.
That makes sense. But why would you recognize it as a kingship or a queenship in the first place if you have only a minor and a regent in place? I mean, if you don't have a permanent incumbent, why would you recognize it as a kingship or a queenship in the first place? Why would it not go straight to being a principal traditional leader?
It is not a recognition of a kingship as such. This refer back to Sipitimus Sithole left, to the commission, Tlapu commission investigations. And it's those 12 that the president eventually recognized in 2010, of which certain, I think, 5 will become principals. It's those that are dealt with here. So they exist. They're already there. The paramounts were already there. But then it was found that those particular ones, the 5 of them, did not meet all the requirements, and therefore when these instances, you know, upon the death, etc., whatever comes, is applicable, then it automatically becomes a principle. Remember also, Chair and Honourable Members, we did mention 2 weeks or so ago that this principle, because it was a discussion position, the principle traditional leader is not a position that you can apply for. It is something that will you will become a principal by operation of law, and it's very limited to about 5, as you mentioned this morning. Then we will have to look at how we're going to change that, Chair, because there will still have to be a transitional provision about the commission, the CTLDC commission, but it will have to be different from what is currently there in 10.
Chair, I have no problem with that. I just want to ask, when will we be getting a cleaned up version of the Act with all the amendments and everything like that?
Try then tomorrow to finalize everything and prepare for our program for October and November. Finalize many things that are like that we can see. And then the team, Johan has said to us, the 2 weeks, then you are working on it again. The moving all the commission that we said, that would be the best thing for us to end today. Tomorrow we are starting at page, page 146. The rest of it.
FT.